Because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebounding.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver, the founder, CEO, and creative mind behind basketballimmersion.com. This is the podcast where you will hear real basketball coaching conversations. Whether you are a new or experienced coach at any level of basketball, these coaching conversations will give you practical ideas to stimulate your coaching and make what you do even better. Without any more delay, let's share the game. I'm excited today to have a basketball coaching conversation with Billy Wozinski, assistant coach at Boston College. Coach Wozinski is in his fourth season at Boston College and ninth season overall on Jim Christian's staff. And you know, Coach, I can tell you, I mean, the reason I reached out to you and was so excited to have you on and to talk basketball with you is because we ran into each other at the Milwaukee Bucks practice. And
yep,
it ended up being probably the most stimulating part of that trip for me was talking to you on the sidelines as we watched. And you stimulated a lot of thoughts in my mind. So I enjoyed that. So welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. Real quick about that time, too, is no disrespect to the Bucks, but our conversation was tremendous. I mean, obviously we learned a ton from the Milwaukee Bucks and we both have good friends that are on staff there, but I thoroughly enjoyed our, what would that have been, 5, 6, 7 hours that we spent up on the balcony together talking basketball as much, if not more, than I did with the Bucks training camp.
Right. And yeah, no, it was great to be in that environment. And obviously so many things that we saw them do stimulated conversation as well. But one of the things to start with was we had a quick conversation about style of play, and we seem to be pretty aligned in terms of games approach to coaching and practice and,
yep,
you know, giving your players some freedom. But you talked about the value of playing within unstructured possessions. Can you talk about that a little bit relative to your program?
Yeah, sure. And I believe, and wholeheartedly, I have a little biased approach, but working for Jim Christian now for 10 years and really getting a lot of leeway, and we bounce a ton of ideas off of us. I think he's one of the most underrated offensive minds in college basketball, if not all basketball. So a couple things that we'll talk about being unstructured play is the first thing that we want to talk about specifically for Boston College is we attack offense specifically in a four-pronged attack. Most people have some sort of this, but we talk about the topics of going, playing with a flow, and then moving, and then executing. So I think most teams have three of those aspects. We really hit on the flow part of basketball, offensive basketball for us. And the flow meaning, it's a common buzzword in basketball, but the flow meaning specifically missed lanes, unstructured situations. And then also, Chris, the situations where you run a set play in the half court where that defense forces you either to walk up or you run one of your 94-foot plays. The play after the play. So we actually call that play flow. So we run a play. It doesn't result in the buckets right off the play. So we go into flow format. And it's huge for us, Chris. We work on our flow aspects at least 20 minutes in a practice series. It took a lot of convincing for Coach Christian to do that. I'm a big offensive guy. I'm a big proponent of letting the guys play free with a little bit of structure, but kind of playing wherever the ball goes. And so we do a ton of advantage situations. We do a ton of, you know, missed lanes, playing 5 versus 3, 5 versus 2, 5 versus 4, 5 versus 4 plus 1, all that stuff. And we think this, and we're a pretty big analytic team. If you can generate, so for us at Boston College, we had 23.6 possessions per game that were flow situations. So after misses, specifically.
Is that just after misses, Coach?
Just after misses. We think we do a pretty good analytical breakdown of what we do offensively comparative to the rest of the teams in college basketball. I know we're nowhere close to them what the NBA does. But we will roll with a 23.6 possession per game miss after miss situation. And so we believe if you can generate over 21 points per game in that kind of chaotic, unstructured situation, it makes good teams great and great teams really unable to be beat. And that's just, the floor is 21 points per game.
Well, I love that. And that's so important. I think even as you move down in levels, if we're talking about high school or AAU or youth levels, I mean, they're playing even more unstructured possessions. And before you get going here, let's unpack a few of those things. You said a four-prong attack. Can we go back to that?
Yes. So
flow, moving, executing. What were the other things?
Obviously, the first one is go. Go meaning we steal it. We want to score. We get a guard rebound. We want to score in 7 seconds. I think most teams have some sort of that going. Our flow situations, and again, it's our biggest key. Those situations are, you know, maybe it's a big rebound and we have to outlet it. We can't early. If you come to our practice or if you watch us play, we're a big early opposite team. Meaning, if a big rebounds it or if a guard rebounds it, we want to push out and always look early opposite. So we're already shifting the defense on one pass.
And we talked about that in depth as well, because at the time I presented that two-side fast break concept, which is what you guys are doing. You're trying to go early and opposite. And I stole that word from you guys because that was huge for us this year, emphasizing that.
Huge. And you know what? I stole Jimmy and I, Coach Christian and I sat down just the other day and we were talking already next year, how do we want to run our lanes? And, you know, we have a pretty big ball screen attack because we have really, really good guard play. But I made that same point, Chris, where we can't shift through and balance before we know that that ball's not going to be early opposite, because I love that double-sided, that two-sided fast break, quick one across, quick one down, wide open three. We never really put a term on it, so I stole your term, two-sided fast break. And obviously you get a lot of that in zone offense too, not to get off on a tangent, but no, you always absolutely. Play that two-sided break or half court on zone. So we go from the go 7 seconds to the flow, meaning we want to play fast, we want to score in seven, but if the defense does do a good job of loading, or if we can't early opposite, we don't want to have to stop and slow down. So we would love just to play off each other. We call it Golden State easy. So that ball movement and that player movement, being able to shift it at least once, if not twice, and really get past that first line of defense and then put the defense in rotation.
Is that ball movement, player movement, screening? What's the emphasis?
Mostly ball movement. We will do some player movement depending on balancing the floor as a secondary movement, but we really want to ball move it in either – skip it opposite, early opposite, drive it middle, drive it baseline. I mean, we talk about staying off that baseline, but in a unstructured, fast-paced, we don't even care if our guys drive baseline. I mean, if it's against the shifting defense, we're okay with that. Some coaches will, you know, obviously not like that. We don't care. We work on it a ton. We just think it gives us another layer to playing fast and free.
Absolutely.
And so, again, when I made the comment that we work on that 20 minutes a day, I mean, we only practice probably 2 hours on a given day. I mean, I don't care if it's practice one or practice 67, we will never go over 2 hours. So for a 20-minute block of just working on that flow, unstructured advantage situation, that's the bulk of our practice. But we firmly believe that's where you win basketball. And then, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I mean, for coaches a little bit to understand what you're saying about like 2 hours, a lot of NCAA Division I teams practice a lot longer than that.
Sure.
But you guys focus within those 2 hours on so many game situations that talking about the energy balance versus the learning balance versus the competing balance, you can't practice long based on your style of practice.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, and we're also a huge individual skill development program. We're in the ACC. We're not competing with Duke or Carolina or Virginia or Louisville for the same caliber ranked student athlete. But if you look at what we've done here in 3 years with the guys we've recruited, there's nobody in the country, specifically our league and the country, that's gotten more out of the talent that we've brought in. So we'll go 2 hours and then myself and all the assistants and Coach Christian will stay afterwards and work 15, 20, 30 minutes one-on-one with guys or small group with guys on, you know, a lot of the game, whatever the game dictates, but a lot of ball handling, a lot of passing, just a little bit more where these guys are getting that individual improvement that they need. And that's day one to the last day of practice. So we'll kind of structure our stuff like that.
And that's great. Especially, I'm going to ask you a little bit about winning with less talent a little bit later on. So,
okay.
I mean, that's going to be a great segue into that topic because, you know, I know that's one of your challenges in that league.
Yeah.
So Golden State easy. After that, what's the next level for you?
So, and I think this is where the league dictates what we do and how we run. Again, we're not that talented. So we go from the go to the flow, which is a huge emphasis for us. And then what I think we do the best is when teams score on us or we have to slow it down or we want a specific, we have two options that we go to. Our movement package, which is really dictated on our fours and fives, because our bigger guys, we have to play with a little bit more skill, a little bit less size. And because the wings in the ACC are so dominant, and if you watch the NBA draft here in about 20 plus days, you'll see wings galore being drafted in the ACC. So what we have to do really to initiate great offense, we have to initiate through our fours and fives, and I think we do a great job with that. So our third component is the move. We call it move, straight move, and it's five guys really making the defense shift and move in a more structured pattern to get what we want. And if anybody has watched this player, if you pop on Synergy, we run a ton of movement to get specific actions because we're just not talented enough to get right to that action.
Right.
We have to move.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to move Marvin Bagley. We have to move Marvin Bagley four times for us to get a layup or whoever the case may be. And then we have our last phase is execute. And these plays, when we call these specific plays, and a ton of them were for Jerome Robinson, who was our best player, led the ACC in scoring. Our execution package, when we call those plays are run. They're never broken off because there's a mismatch or we need to get that guy the ball. So there's the four-pronged attack. Again, it goes go, flow, move, and then execute. And those execute plays, those plays better be ran. And those plays are for specific mismatch or specific guys that are hot. So that's BC offensively in a nutshell, really.
Well, that's outstanding. That's an easy way to package it, not for just coaches, but obviously for your players as well.
Exactly.
Such an important part is simplicity in terminology, simplicity in teaching, and simplicity in learning. And that's outstanding. I think a lot of coaches will be stealing that. So that's wonderful. So those unstructured moments, you talked about 23.6%, and that's on missed shots.
Straight misses. Yeah, straight misses. And then you're going to get a handful of makes where we call them during our movement segment. We have two phases of movement. So we call them 94-foot plays, or obviously our half-court stuff. So if somebody scores against us, we will be in some sort of 94-foot play action, meaning ball's taken out, four-man takes it out, blah, 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 and we're looking for this specific action. But out of those plays, you know, obviously there's flow or unstructured out of makes. And like I said, you could be calling X play in the half court, and we run it, and then at the end of the day, we don't get points off it, or some team takes us out of X play, well, then that turns into a flow bucket too, you know? So we really teach not just the play, we really teach how to play off that play. So analytically, we have a statistical category that's called play flow, which means we want to run a play, we either get to it, get nothing, or we don't even get to the action and we're right into unstructured play flow. And we usually get about anywhere from 9 to 12 of those a game too. So you're looking at almost 33, 32 possessions of unstructured play out of what? 70 plus possessions. So almost 50% of your actions are, you know, unstructured. So you better be working on it in practice.
Yeah, really important. And I think, you know, there's some underrated parts of what you're saying, which is, it's not just giving your players freedom, it's also being deceptive towards your opponent, that your opponent doesn't know exactly what's coming. Even though they may have scouted a play, your players can break off the play as well in those unstructured moments because they read an advantage. And that's
exactly
that advantage-disadvantage situations.
Let me piggyback what you just said for us specifically. So I think we ran 16-point-something ball screens a game, and we never saw our ball screen offense really suffer at all. And that's a pretty big chunk of offense, just ball screen. But we never saw it really. Teams, you know, would try to ice, would try to trap our guards, would show flat. You know, you name the gamut. Guys tried to take us away from our ball screen. But we do so much other stuff and actions and movement that, okay, which one are you going to pick to scout us on? And we never really saw our ball screen offense really get strangled. And we believe it's because we do such a good job on the other aspects of offense. So, okay, you want to take us out of ball screen? Okay, what about our flow game? You want to take it out of flow game? We got ball screen and we got our movement segment. You know, so, yeah, we're a big offensive team. Now, defensively, we've gotten better and better throughout the years. But, you know, offense is where we kind of hang our hat, which is right. It makes it great to talk about. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, it's a lot more fun to talk about. But, you know, defense is incredibly important. Don't get me wrong. But I think offense is definitely something we can geek out on a little bit more. But, you know, the other part about that is for you to beat some of the more talented teams,
right?
You need to score. I think coaches kind of misunderstand. When you're playing with less talent, you've got to maximize your scoring. Because at some point, you just can't get stops against some of those great players you play against. So trying to score is obviously extremely valuable in that sense, too.
Well, when we first walked into the ACC, and we were kind of, you know, we had a lot of seniors, and they were kind of been through the ringer. Obviously, you don't get jobs in the ACC unless times are tough. And so, you know, our talent was decent. We had Olivia Hanlon, a Canadian, who was tremendous, who was a first-team All-League guy. But then the rest of the guys, they were just good pieces. And so we struggled to score. And back then, and even more so now, if you're not getting above 71 points per game in the ACC, you have less than like a 25% chance of winning because everybody is so talented. And obviously, the higher you get over 71%, you know, you get in the 40s and 50s. And then, you know, when we went on that run at the end of the year, you know, our ACC tournament play, we were at 88 points a game. And we weren't running much, and we were playing out of flow, and we were in a great groove, and obviously we had unbelievable confidence throughout our lineup. But, you know, it kind of gets your mouth watering for next year because you start scoring in the mid-80s, high-80s, and you start beating some of the best teams in our league, which are some of the best teams in the country, and you get 72% of your points back, 90-plus percent of your rebounding back. We think we're going to do a pretty decent job next year, too. So. But it's all offensively, for sure.
Well, and it's probably inspired your players a little bit, seeing that progress and seeing that, you know, that development of the offense. Because, you know, again, everything leads to more support for what you're teaching and how you're teaching it. So that's great. Coach, going back and to it, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and you hear Charles Barkley and these guys talking about in the NBA during the Houston series, you know, when those secondary and thirdary players are getting easy looks and actually scoring the ball. You know, when it comes to the defensive side of the court, everybody knows, hey, if I bang a three or if I get an easy layup, everybody plays just a little harder when they go back on defense because they're feeling good about themselves. So that's what basketball is all about, a game of runs, obviously, and confidence. But if you get some secondary, thirdary dudes putting the ball through the hoop, all of a sudden, you know, you get a block shot, you get a steal, you get a loose ball because everyone's feeling pretty good about themselves offensively. It's just kind of transcends your defense, and next thing you know, you're back off to the races, that 7-second play again. So,
well, I imagine in your offense too, that the majority of the players will touch the ball in a possession based on what you're saying, which empowers them even more to be a part of the team.
And again, we put our bigs, we're very reliant on our fours and fives. You know, back in when I first got with Coach Christian at TCU, like our four men were truly our secondary playmakers, almost the second point guard on the floor, because we ran everything through our four men because it was our advantage. Now, fast forward 8 years, same thing at the ACC. You know, the four men are not very good also, so we look for skilled five men. And so we'll do a lot of dribble handoff, a lot of initiating offense through our fives all over the place, top of the key, wing, perimeter, where most of our guys were playing against the fives. They're not as quick. They're not used to guarding out in the perimeter in the ACC. So we've kind of moved the four-man into the five-man into the four-man role. But you got to have a lot of patience with those guys because, you know, they don't always make the right decision. That's why practice for us is huge.
Yeah, that's great. And I want to go back even to one of the points that you made about on makes and creating unstructured moments, because one of the things that we found, and I'm curious what you guys found on this, is that when we went early and opposite on makes, we ran more unstructured possessions on makes than we'd ever run before. And I thought that was brilliant for our guys and our philosophy. That simple thing of being willing to move it early and opposite and not have a point guard just always dribble it over half just created a far more opportunity for us. And
no, you hit the nail on the head. There's no doubt about that. And that's why it's one of the huge buzzwords for us at Boston College, especially in practice, drill work, you know, 3-on-1 situations. We're always looking to throw that thing opposite on a make. It could be opposite through the trail. It could be, you know, once you shift, you know how guys are defensively from the highest levels to grammar school basketball. Once you have to make that defense shift one time, if those five guys aren't connected defensively, you can take advantage right off the get-go. There's no question about that. And once you get through that first line of defense, you know, for us, that's all we're looking to do. Bust it down and keep that ball moving. You know, you're hard to guard. You really are. I mean, I don't care what level you're at. If you can get through that initial make miss on the early opposite, either by ball movement or dribble drive movement, shoot, you know, that's why we call it Golden State Easy. They're the best in the country at it. They move that thing from side to side, make, miss, after timeout, side out of bounds, OB under, doesn't matter. Once they move it one time and put that defense in a position where they're not loaded anymore, it's time to take advantage. That's what we try to do.
That's great. And that's a great explanation of unstructured possessions and, you know, what we mean, because it's not just on misses, it's on makes as well. And
absolutely,
it's in a half court. It's not just a full court situation. That unstructured situations can happen at any time. And do you prepare your players for them? And clearly, from a Boston College perspective, that you guys spend a ton of time on that. And that's great. Coach, let's go back to winning with less talent then. We talked a little bit about individual development, focus on your players getting better, your team gets better. What are some of the other things that you guys focus on in terms of winning in a league where, again, I don't want to say you're void of talent.
Obviously.
Yeah, different guys. But, you know, a lot of us face a situation in our leagues where, you know, there's three or four teams that are more talented than us. And what do you guys focus on in playing those games?
Well, sure. First off, obviously, recruiting is huge. We all know it's the lifeblood of every program, especially in college, whatever level you're at. But within recruiting, there's different things that we look for, obviously. We're not going to get McDonald's All-Americans yet. We've got our highest recruit probably in the last 12 years at Boston College coming in this year, who is a top 60 ranked player in the country. But for the most part, that's not who we are. We really evaluate. Coach Christian's put together a staff, Coach Spinelli, Coach Cheeks, myself, that we kind of look out of the box. We still can find some hidden gems, and we've done it, you know, up and down our lineup now, specifically in the state of North Carolina. We have two kids that were ranked plus 300, not that rankings care to us at all, but one of them is going to be a top 20 draft pick, top 24 draft pick this year. And Kai Bowman, who just actually was returning back from the whole draft experience, and he took his name out last night. He was a football player, and he's going to play in the NBA, probably be a first-round draft pick in 2019. But the one thing about those guys and all our guys is their willingness and their love for the game of basketball. It's glaring. It glows every single day.
How do you evaluate that, Coach, in the recruiting process?
Well, you have to build strong relationships. You have to have some trust, and you have to be really transparent. We tell kids on recruiting visits, hey, listen, if you're not in love with the game of basketball, if it's not priority to you, you won't just get embarrassed with the other guys in the locker room, because we truly do have basketball junkies. It's so refreshing to see 6-7 guys at 11 o'clock at night in the gym working on their jump shots with the guns and all themselves. But they won't just get embarrassed by that. Our staff is extremely passionate about basketball. And if you want your locker room to be right, if you want your locker room to click, well, it better start in the front in your office. If your office is, because you're preaching to them every day and kids aren't dumb. They watch and they learn and they could say, hey, that guy's full of BS. Or, hey, man, this guy loves the game. I better get my butt in gear. And our office is like that. So it transcends into our locker room. You know, who you are is who you're going to recruit. And it kind of sticks out and it kind of separates himself pretty easy. Those kids, yeah, of course, some guys in our locker room, you want them to do more, of course. But for the majority of the time, our kids are gym rats. I mean, they're chip on the shoulder, basketball loving. A lot of them have coaching in their families, either a father, a brother, a mother. We look at all that stuff. We look at the records of the kids in high school. Did they get their, even in bad teams, did they ever get their teams to the playoffs? Did they win games in the playoffs? And listen, we take chances, Chris, on kids that people be like, you can't even play Division I basketball. We literally, I know this is not recruiting talk, we took a kid last year from Minnesota. He had not one Division I offer. He was going to walk on somewhere. And we said, you know what? Let's take a risk at him. He played 36 minutes a game for us as a freshman.
That's amazing.
He's the all-time freshman leading rebounder in Boston College history. And
just
he
think,
literally
just think about that, Coach, that his only offer was Boston College. Like,
yeah,
low-level Division I. That's, you know, we're talking big-time Division I.
Sure. I think his backup plan, he's from Minnesota, but his backup plan was to go to like one of the South Dakotas or one of the Dakotas and kind of be like, hey, listen, you know, I'm not getting recruited. What do you think? So we kind of live on that. Ty Bowman and Jerome Robinson, they were maybe mid-level recruits. Now, Ty got a little bit more love at the end because he was a big-time football player, could have gone to Alabama to play football. And he told Nick Saban no, which is another podcast all for itself, another hour podcast. But
cool.
Those, our kids are basketball, old school, Indiana, Hinkle Fieldhouse type guys. And we love it because as coaches, that's who we are. And it makes them easy to learn and easy to teach. Like, that's what the game's about. Sometimes as coaches, we cloud this thing up and we muddy it up. At the end of the day, it's still hoop. It's still a game we all love. It's still pretty easy to teach. We just kind of got to get out of our own way as coaches, and we got to make sure we're players first. And that's what we do here at Boston College. That's why I think we can win with less talent.
Yeah, and that's great. And that's a great blueprint for people, too, in terms of understanding the recruiting process at schools, you know, who don't get to pick and choose exactly from the list of the top 100 or whatever. But it's about development. So beyond recruiting, what are some other things that you guys really think works in terms of competing with less talent in a league like the ACC?
Well, number one for us is basketball IQ for all the reasons that we talked about already offensively. So even when you're in a muddy AAU game, how does that person, what's important to that kid? Is he moving the ball even if he's on a selfish team? You know, IQ for us, we run a lot of complex stuff. Like you said, we do a lot of pulse movement. Can they understand what we're even doing? And two, are they willing to do it? Because a lot of kids this day and age, they're not willing to do what we ask so we can win games. The ability to shoot the ball at five spots. You know, will we take some gambles on some kids that have some technical issues with their jump shot? Yeah, we will. But we have to know on visits that they're willing to, hey, we think we can, if we just change this little thing, you know, we talk about being 40% three-point shooters in games. So to be that, what do you have to shoot? 70%+ in practice situation? And we kind of throw out all those stats. And if you can't shoot at five spots for us, it's going to be hard for you to be successful, and it's going to be hard for you to hit the floor.
Sorry, can I ask a question about that in terms of evaluating a recruit? Because I honestly don't know the answer at your level. Are you allowed to work out a player on a visit or at their place?
Well, here's the new rule. You never could if the young man wanted to get into a pickup game, you know, unsupervised by your coaching staff, can never watch that. So now the NCAA has changed their tone a little bit over the last, I think now it'd be year and a half. As long as he's exhausted eligibility, as long as he's on an official visit and he's turned in paperwork where medically he's cleared, you know, there's like a 3-box checklist, that person now can work out on official visits only. So we've utilized it.
Yeah, no, that's got to be a huge difference. I mean, I don't personally recruit or offer a kid unless I've worked them out. And we don't have any other.
Right.
There's a no-brainer.
That makes sense. It makes sense to us. And you know what, though? Most people are thinking, oh, that sucks because you're, in a sense, trying out the kid, which is obviously true. But nobody looks on the other end of it like the kid should want to be like, he gets a great feel how practice is going to be. And he could see himself in that shoes, in that practice uniform. Either it's for him or it's not for him. So it's both ways now. I mean, yeah, we get a great look to see how that guy will react in our practice situation. However, that kid also gets a great look on how Coach Christian, the head coach, is going to be every day in practice. The passion that all three assistants bring. So it goes both ways. And anytime we've done it, we don't always do it. Anytime we've done it, both the families, the kid and, you know, the mom and dad, they enjoyed the heck out of it. And those kids that we've done, they've all come. So something's right with it.
Right. And I would think again, I mean, I sell it to the player as saying, hey, listen, I don't want you to come unless you truly believe in how we work you out, how we develop you and, you know,
exactly
how we're going to play. So, I mean, this is an advantage. And at that point, usually I've already got somewhat of an evaluation. So I tell them, I'm not really evaluating you, even though extent you always are, but it's more to get a feel for them, as you said.
No doubt.
Do they like the practice? Do they like to work on their game? And is their shot fixable in some ways too? So you just talked about shooting at all five spots. What basketball IQ, shooting at all five spots, are the things that help you guys compete?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be multidimensional, right? I mean, you can't be, everybody talks about positionless and all that. Yeah, I get it. It's a buzzword. Draymond Green has made that famous for everybody, but if we can't play like that, we can't win because we'll never be able to compete with Duke or Carolina for those ridiculously talented players. I mean, basically our whole league. But if there's not a will to get better and if there's not a great base already of skill at every position, you know, we'll really struggle. And the teams that we've had that struggled, just say at Boston College, that's probably, that's basically the reason is, we were too one-dimensional. We didn't have enough ball handlers. You know, we're a big secondary, thirdary, fourthary ball handling team. We've always had a great point guard, but the teams that struggled, you know, where, okay, could our secondary players make plays? And when we can get, you know, playmaking from some other spots, it doesn't have to be even the guard spot. We're very, very good because it always goes back to that flow segment for us. When we can get 21 plus points on unstructured play, we're pretty hard to beat because of the other stuff that we do.
That's great. I know you guys are a big analytics program. You've alluded to that already. Are there some stats specifically that you can share, especially with kind of, you know, say high school coaches or other levels of coaches that they would say, if I'm coaching at that level, this is what I would focus on. Because obviously not all of us have a staff, not all of us have, you know, managers, not all of us have access to Synergy or whatever you're on. What are the ones that stand out to you that you would focus on?
Well, I think just to keep on the offensive side of it is obviously possessions per play, but what are you getting out per possession? So we run, I think at the end of the year, we had less than 20 play sets. And so we had some plays that we've had from day one to the last day, and we've changed a lot of our packages. We're very specific on who we play. We'll put in specific plays to take advantage of some stuff. However, I think if you're at the high school level, or college level or any level, you know, if you're calling plays, you need to know exactly what you're getting off those plays. So meaning how many points per possession, what are you getting off each play? So for us, we have every play set that we've run throughout the whole year, how many times we've ran that play, what's the point per possession, was it percentage of shots and percentage of fouls in that play, was it a positive result, was it a negative result? So that's something I think being an offensive guy, well, we're running X play, but we're only scoring at a maybe a point you know, 6-7, well, then why are we running that play? But then you're looking at it, say we ran it 20 times, we got fouled 9 times. And so, you know, there's stats within the stat, but I want to know what we're running and what the result of that play is and how many points per possession is that getting to us. So if you would look at our analytical breakdown, we do it after every game. We do it after every 8 games. And then we do it through conference, and then we have a huge one at the end of the year. So I could pull the one at the end of the year and say, you know, one of our best plays ran was tilt. Okay, so we run tilt 84 times the whole year. We get a point per possession of 1.21, which is pretty gaudy. And then at 81% of the time, we either got a shot or we got fouled. Well, that's pretty good. And so maybe I'm running another play that we ran 50 times, and those percentages and everything is not very good, and you have maybe 10 of those possessions are negative. Well, let's throw that out, and let's make sure we're putting something new in that's going to get us a little bit more of an advantage. So we do that. We're a big
Coach,
lineup.
Just before we go to the next thing, that I think, again, like we talk about, I mean, the main reason I do basketball immersion and I do podcasts now is to share the game, but also share useful, practical way. And I think what you just said there is so important, because I think all levels of coaches can do that. I can actually go back 20 years ago when I did my master's degree, I did my final project on points per possession, even though I didn't know at the time that's what it was called. I tracked plays of the team I was working with, and then I tracked outcome. And it was amazing how much, because I would then go back to the head coach, and whether he listened or not, that was kind of up to him. But it was kind of saying, we're spending all this time in practice on tilt, but it's translating into this outcome in most of the possessions. And if it translates to a negative outcome, then why are you spending so much time on practice? Or throw it out. Get rid of it. And can you give us an idea of, and for coaches, I'll share in the show notes, or as I share this episode, I'll make sure I put up some of that old master's thesis stuff so people can get a
sure.
But give us an idea, Coach, what is a BADS points per possession in terms of, you know, your philosophy? You said tilt was kind of a 1.21. Would you say it would be
whatever
you'd consider
getting
a play?
Yeah, so anything under 0.7, we kind of look at like, what are we doing? Again, there's stats within that stat. So even if it's, like I alluded to earlier, if we're in a execute phase of offense and we get our best player the ball, and maybe we get specific 0.71 points per possession off that play, but he's getting to the line over 50% of the time. Okay, we'll keep it in. But we tend to be pretty gaudy over here at Boston College. Like, we like 0.8s and 0.9s and 1 points.
Of course.
It's not always the case. So we will play, like, after miss, I think I said, you know, it was 23-plus possessions a game.
Yep.
And we clocked in at like a 0.89. Personally speaking, it's a pretty good number. We need to work to get to a 0.9 at least. Obviously, a 1 is ridiculous with that many possessions per game. But I still think there's some untapped stuff that we could work on after the miss, or specifically unstructured. But we were at a 0.85, 0.86, 0.87, I believe it was, throughout the year. Anything under 0.7, you know, you got to kind of maybe look at it. And then, is it a mainstay play, or is it a play that we put in specific for the matchup? Louisville was playing their matchup. You know, if it was a specific, if it's under 0.7, it won't be in long, or we'll have to tweak it. If it's a game prep, you know, at a 0.7 or 0.6 something, it probably served its purpose for a short term.
Well, it's interesting because, like, as you said that, like, you'll put in specific plays for your opponent too.
Sure. So.
Based on an offensive scout. And, you know, I know some coaches that don't do that, and I know some coaches that do, but I am assuming at this point going into this is the fifth season you'll go into right now at Boston College, that you'll have a bit of an idea of the points per possession of different plays versus different opponents.
Absolutely.
You know, even though their personnel changes, you kind of get a feel based on their style of play, assuming it's the same coach, that certain plays work against certain teams.
Well, I'll give you, for instance, I mean, and we saw it, if you've seen it for years and everybody sees it, especially if you know, if you're any kind of fan of basketball. But I'll give you a specific. So if you walk into Syracuse game with your package, whatever your package is throughout the whole year, and if you don't think you need to put in something specific for Syracuse, you're going to lose. And if you look, if you just take us, for instance, if you look at us from the four-year span, anytime we've had more than 2-3 days prep for Syracuse, we've had a great, great result. Now, playing Syracuse at Syracuse is a different creature in its own. But if you think you're just going to roll out against Syracuse and say, here's our 2-3 zone all, and you're going to be successful, look what they've done in the NCAA tournament. When some people unfairly say, oh, they've gotten in, they've gotten in, they've got, how'd they get in? And then they make that run like Coach Boeheim always does. It's pretty specific last year, 2-3 years ago, because most teams think they can just waltz right in and, oh, my zone O is pretty good. Guys, it's not good against that. Yeah, Louisville with Coach Pitino, same way. And they still did it a little bit this year. You know, if you're not putting something specific in against Louisville to manipulate their matchup, you have no chance. They switch 1 through 5. They don't care if 5's on the 1 and the 1's playing your 5. If you can't get the ball to where you need to get it, you have no chance to win. Virginia, right? The best gap team in the country. If you think you're going to waltz in against Virginia and run your stuff, you might get 25. You might get 30. It happened to us at Virginia 3 years ago. I think we had 11 points at halftime. Yeah, but wow. You look them throughout the history of Coach being at Virginia, they always get 3-4 teams that don't get 40. Well, you better manipulate them because they play this. I don't want to give away secrets. They play the same way no matter what you're running. Well, you better manipulate your offense to take advantage of what they do redundantly. It's not like Coach Bennett doesn't know. I mean, one of the biggest compliments that we've got was from Coach Bennett after game one, year one, we played Virginia at our place. We lost. But he's like, you guys do things to us offensively that nobody else in the country really has done. You know, for Coach Christian, put a smile on his face. Yeah, we took another L that year. But at the end of the day, it's great to get that praise and recognition from one of the best defensive coaches maybe in the history of college basketball. Let's be honest.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
And so if you're not specific package for some of these specific teams in the ACC, you're really risking it. You really are.
Well, and this leads into a question, which I'll let you address, and I kind of know the answer, but like when you add, you subtract. This isn't like you're adding 100 plays and you still have 100 plays. You're adding and subtracting. But more so, do you find because of the style of practice that you guys practice with, where you do have a lot of offense versus defense, and you're doing a lot of work on unstructured moments, that your players can pick up plays a lot faster? In terms of, you can introduce new plays because they know how to play.
Absolutely. Really good evaluation by you there, yeah. And it does go back to a little bit of the recruiting. We know we switch a lot of stuff. We know you got to have a really good basketball IQ to play for Coach Christian, or at least it helps. But when you said it, when we add, we do subtract. So I think I couldn't give you the specific number. We were under 20 our last game at NC State in the ACC tournament. But I would think throughout the year, we were probably close to 70 play sets or little wrinkles. When we do something specific for a team in the ACC, it always comes out of the same family of play. So our families, they all look the same. So we'll call something, all the guys know where to get to. I mean, this is on our structured play. So it might be the same exact play with a little wrinkle with a player instead of a downswing. Just little things like that. But once they understand the family of plays, the wrinkles are very, very simplistic. And again, they could be just one little difference. And so when they know how to play, they have a great feel for our offensive package already. It's very simple to make little minor changes, and the guys just kind of flow with it. They really do.
So when we talk about, because I actually texted you this in advance of this, because I got this question from someone, but when we talk about a system for verbal and visual cues for play calling, it's one of the things that you mentioned is a family of plays. And what we're talking about basically is saying it's, you have thumbs as a family of plays. You'll have thumbs up, you'll have thumbs down, that they all work off of the same basic setup. there's little counters and little tweaks and pretty common naming system. But can you add anything to that in terms of advice for coaches in terms of system of verbals?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody could do better in this situation. I mean, we play in some hostile environments, and again, we'll have to call timeout too, just like everybody else in the country. But we try to keep it as simple as possible. You know, our 94-foot plays, I kind of alluded to this earlier. So somebody does score against us, you know, we take the ball out of bounds. We come at it a traditional spread situation, two wide, three wide, five rim, four trail, you know, one whatever. So we'll have a family of 94-foot plays. And those plays are all quick hitting, really specific early actions. And so we kind of, you know, I'll give you our point. We kind of have those as arms out, like a open kind of situation. And then we have little twists and turns depending on what we want out of it. It helps because we've been in situations where we'll say before a game starts, okay, we're an open twist. Anytime they score, and we're an open twist until we change it at a dead ball. So our guys know already. So if you're on the bench, if you're a starter and the ball goes through the hoop, we're an open twist until timeout comes, dead ball comes. We'll do it on free throws a little bit. Hey, 94-foot play, we're an open pin. And then everybody says, bench included, and guys on the floor, open pin rest of the game until we change it. So everybody knows what page we're on. So we do have a pretty easy, specific way of calling plays. We only change them, especially 94-foot plays on dead balls. Now, half-court sets, you know, it's a crapshoot. You know how it goes. Yeah. You want something specific. You're yelling, screaming. I've seen guys lift up boards. You know, I'm not a big fan of that because everybody's head turns, and next thing you know, you're getting the ball ripped. You know, If you have a great way to communicate half-court sets, I'd love to hear it because, again, it's the age-old argument or debate. How do you get your plays across to your guys? I mean, it's a great question.
Coach, it's something that I'm going to explore a little bit. And I think that's, again, hopefully the value of some of the stuff that I'm able to do is bring a bunch of people together, you know, through various resources and say, let's come up with some good ideas. And I imagine it's different at home versus on the road in a lot of cases as well. And I've always thought that it's easy to call plays at home and it's much harder on the road and different things like that. And if coaches actually factor those things in, and I've even asked NBA guys, if they care, like, do you care if they know your play calls? Cause clearly everyone has everyone's play call because of the advanced scouts and all the stuff like that.
Exactly.
And they said, you know, the one guy said there's like two or three coaches that really try and hide them, but the rest by and large, they know that's just the realities of it. So,
yeah. I mean, by the time you get in league play, I mean, there's no secrets, right? Either you can execute and get what you want and you'll probably win. And if you don't, you're probably going to lose. So play calls, as long as you're an executing team. And again, it goes back to getting easy, unstructured buckets. The easier and the more points you can score unstructured, it just makes your structure that much better.
Could not agree more, Coach. I could not agree more. Well, again, outstanding. I'm so glad we got a chance to talk, and I look forward to more conversations with you down the road. And
yeah, please.
Yeah, hopefully we're running each other. I'll get a chance to finally get there and watch you guys because I know Coach Christian and you guys do an outstanding job there teaching the game of basketball. So thanks so much, Coach.
Well, I will say this parting words, two things. One, for you and whoever listens to this podcast, if anybody would like to contact me, feel free. You can get my email address online. We share just about everything with anybody. So if anybody wants, you know, drill work, practice work, game flow of anything that we spoke about specifically, feel free to email me. We'll send it to you. And two, just so you know this, Chris, Monday through Thursday, I wake up an hour early, wake up at 5:30 Monday through Thursday for one reason only. I get up and I geek out and I get on my laptop and I get on every social media site. And the first thing I look at is your basketball immersion. And from when we first met, early, what would that have been, October. Till today, I rave about you and what you've done, and not only your influence and your ability to share the most simplistic to the most complex things on your basketball immersion site, but you as a friend and an unbelievable basketball coach. So I thank you specifically for doing this, because in an era where guys kind of don't share anymore, I love everything you're doing. I really do. And, you know, that 5:30 to 6:30 every morning before my workout is solely based on trying to get more information, individual skill work-wise or practice-wise or whatever the case may be. And a lot of it comes from you, Matt. So I really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much, Coach. I'm humbled by those words. And now I know where to text you and when to text you. So that's awesome.
Always. Anybody looking for a partner early in the morning, it's always me.
That's awesome. And I'll share your email and your Twitter on the show notes as well, so coaches can find you there. But thanks so much, Coach.
You're the best, man. I appreciate your time. Good luck to you and everybody up there in Canada.
Find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today. Please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.